almost live from New York City. It's another bout of the no-show, reminding you today that we all lead lives of quiet desperation, but some of us are not so quiet about it.
Working in this town, and it's worried me night and day. Everybody's working in this town, and it's worried me night and day. Yes, that mean working too. Had to work for the WPA. Well, the landlord come this morning, and he knocked on my door. He asked me if I was going to pay my rent no more. He said, you have to move, if you can't pay. And then he turned and he walked slowly away. So I'll have to try. Find me some other place to stay. That house wrecking crew's coming from the WPA. Well, I went to the release station and I didn't have a cent. They said, stay on where you stand. You don't have to pay no rent. So when I got back home, they was tacking a notice on the door. This house is condemned and you can't live here no more. So my notion struck me, I'd better be on my way. They're gonna tear my house down. Phew, that crew from the WPA. Well, I went out next morning. I put a lock on my door. But though I wouldn't move, but I have no place to go. The real estate people, they all done got sold. They don't rent no relief plants no more. So I know how to walk the streets night and day. Because that wrecking crew's coming, whew, from that WPA. Well, the notion struck me, I tried to stay a day or two, but I soon found out that that wouldn't do. Well, the next morning, while I was laying in my bed, I had a mighty rumbling and bricks come tumbling down on my head. So I started ducking and dodging and be on my way. They was tearing my house down on me. Phew, that crew from that WPA.
Well, hasn't this been a busy week? So many things to talk about, and many more to ignore, like A-Rod and performance-enhancing drugs. I know that much of the nation is in a lather about this, but I just don't give a damn. But now there will be an asterisk next to his name in the record books. Who cares? I guess asterisk he took. A brief word about the ephemeral appointment of Senator Judd Gregg to the cabinet position of Secretary of Commerce. Nuts. Just as I was finally getting his name straight. Judd Gregg, not Greg Judd, not Jughead, not Judge Dredd. Judd, oh, I just remembered I'm a Republican, Gregg. Back to his richly deserved obscurity. I resent him for making me even momentarily conscious of his existence. The economic stimulus bill passed Congress and was signed into law by President Obama, along with the death certificate for bipartisanship. Obama says it will take months at least, maybe a couple of years, for the stimulus to take effect. I can wait. I've waited decades for a little stimulation. What's a couple of more years? Ethanol, remember that? Farmers all over the Midwest growing enormous amounts of corn to produce ethanol to reduce our dependency on foreign oil. And then what? Foreign oil becomes cheaper than domestic ethanol, and the Midwest becomes a collection of poor old dirt farmers. Valentine's Day. Got through that one. Counted remotes. More on that in a minute. But that reminds me, last week on our Broken News segment, we reported on a man from Maine, a self-styled zoophile, who considers himself married, in the eyes of God, to his dog, Lady. This week, there was a report that villagers in India married a young girl to a stray dog to ward off an evil spirit. The report says locals at Munda Danda village performed the ceremony as they believe it will overcome any curse that might fall on the family. Interestingly, the report continues, the girl is free to get married later in life to a man without even seeking a divorce. Well, come on. She's like four and the dog is a mature dog, so she will probably have been widowed by the time she's old enough to marry. The report concludes rather gratuitously, I think, that superstitions are widespread in India, especially in rural areas where literacy is scarce, as distinguished from urban America, which fears asterisks in sport record books. I will remain alert. Well, I'll try to remain conscious and will relay any further reports of interspecies matrimony between humans and dogs. Now that the possibility is out there, I imagine the idea will spread like warm butter. For me, Valentine's Day was like any other. I spent the day in Trivial Pursuit. The other night I had nothing to do, so what else is new? I decided that counting the number of remotes in the house and then counting the number of buttons on these remotes was a wise way to spend my time. A rewarding endeavor, and one that will change the world over a period of time. Because of the high security nature of the information, it must be told to only a very few people. That's where you, dear listener, come in. We could hardly find a smaller group of people. So now, my friends, as John McCain would say, herewith the true story of how many remotes and the number of buttons they contain. We have a modest total of 8 remotes. They contain 256 buttons. There are remotes for TVs, air conditioners, radio, CD player, DVD player. There is a remote that draws my bath and puts up the coffee. Though right-handed, I wield the remote with my left hand. It has become sort of an appendage to my arm. Remotes are always getting lost. We need a remote to find our remotes. And how many of the 256 buttons do I know how to use? Oh, about 6 or 7, maybe 10 at the most. I'm afraid of them. It's like cohabitating with an alien being. Will I ever learn my way around these things? I'd say at best there is a remote possibility.
Lights and
Let's see, what else? Things are colliding a lot. Two orbiting satellites collided, adding yet more space junk into the mix. And two atomic submarines, one French and one British, collided underwater. How in the hell can that happen? They have atomic engines and atomic weapons, and one assumes an array of sophisticated electronics, and they can't sense that they're about to run into something? Isn't that a major oversight, design-wise? Blackwater. Blackwater has changed its name to Z, spelled X-E, pronounced Z. Oh well, that changes everything. Guess they must be pretty good guys after all. Really, what were they thinking? We are in deep doo-doo. Our people are getting arrested for rape and bloody murder. We are being sued for misappropriation of funds and shoddy work resulting in death. I know what let's do. Let's change our name. UFO sightings in Texas, where else? And someone filmed this one. Actually, what they filmed was a white blur descending to the horizon. Why is it that UFO films are always so blurry? Maybe that's why the flying objects are unidentified. They're too blurry to identify. All right, moving along, we will be joined soon by our friend and resident naturalist Richard Milner, because, as you doubtless know, because the no-show audience may be very small, but it is very well informed, that this year marks the 200th birthday of Charles Darwin. Happy birthday, Charles. And it is the 150th anniversary of the publication of his seminal work, The Origin of Species. Last week's New York Times science section was devoted to Darwin, and there was an entire article about Richard Milner's show, Charles Darwin Alive and in Concert, which Richard is performing all over the country while simultaneously writing books faster than I can read them. Segment, we heard Poor Old Dirt Farmer by Levon Helm, WPA Blues by Casey Bill Weldon, Control by the Vincent Black Shadow, and finally One Dime Blues by Etta Baker. And now, this urgent message. Thank you.
they know the Bible teaches what is right. They believe in God above and His great undying love, and they know they are protected by His might. Then to Dayton came a man with his new ideas so grand, and he said, "We came from monkeys long ago, but in teaching his belief, Mr. Stokes found only grief, for they would not let their old religion go. You may find a new belief, it will only bring you grief, for a house that's built on sand is sure to fall. And wherever you may turn, there's a lesson you will learn, that the old religion's better after all." Then the folks throughout the land saw his house was built on sand, and they said, "We will not listen anymore." So they told him he was wrong, and it wasn't very long till he found that he was barred from every door. Oh, you must not doubt the word that is written by the Lord, for if you do, your house will surely fall. And Mr. Scope will learn that wherever he may turn, the old religion's better after all. You may find a new belief, it will only bring you grief, for a house that's built on sand is sure to fall. And wherever you may turn, there's a lesson you will learn, that the old religion's better after all.
Our guest today is our favorite naturalist here on The No Show, and our friend Richard Milner. And it is appropriate that we have him here today, since this year is the 200th birthday of Darwin's birth. He was born, by the way, on the same day as Abraham Lincoln. And it is the 150th anniversary of The Origin of Species. Welcome and talk to us, Richard.
Thank you. Very nice to be here. I've just come from doing the Darwin Show in various parts of the country, and I'm a little bit tired. I feel about 200 years old myself today.
How is the show going over in far-flung places like the South?
Well, you know, I've had many different experiences with that. I could tell you, once I did it in Louisiana, and there were college kids in the audience wearing creationist T-shirts, down with Darwin, up with Jesus, and so on. And then this young lady came back to me after the show, and she said, "Mr. Milner, would you sign my program, please?" And I said, "Well, you are against Darwin. You obviously don't believe a word I said about anything tonight, so why would you want me to sign your program?" "Well," she said, "our biology teacher told us that we would get extra credit if we come to your show, and I want to prove that I was here, so please sign my program." Another girl came up to me that same show and said, "Thank you so much for bringing the tradition of science and Huxley and Darwin and Stephen Gould out here, because all my friends call me a pagan and an antichrist," and it was very touching.
Let's discuss for a minute the book about Darwin the abolitionist.
Yeah, a new book just came out. It's redundant. Certainly an old book wouldn't just come out, but a book came out by Adrian Desmond, a great English writer, and James Moore in England. They had collaborated previously on a book called Darwin the Tormented Evolutionist, which was for a long time the standard Darwin biography, until Janet Brown's two-volume thing came along. But it's still a very classic piece of work. These guys are, I know them, and they're great scholars. They're interesting writers. And they were trying to explore and understand the background for Darwin's book about man, because in The Origin of Species, Darwin did not discuss humans. He discussed all kinds of animals and plants, but he only had one line about humans, a famous line. He wrote, "Light will be thrown on the origin of man and his history." That's all he wrote, The Origin of Species. And so people were waiting and waiting for the other shoe to drop. What is Darwin going to write about human evolution? And he didn't until 1871, and he wrote this book called The Descent of Man. And the Descent of Man followed several other books on the evolution of man. The German Ernst Haeckel wrote one. His friend Thomas Henry Huxley wrote one, Essay on Man's Place in Nature. By the time Darwin had written the Descent of Man, the majority of botanists and zoologists had been won over to the idea that each species did not appear instantly and separately, but that they were related in common descent from one great tree of life. He expected that the book would be, quote, denounced by some as highly irreligious, although he never attacks religion. But why, he wondered, and so did Huxley, why is human evolution from some lower form any more shocking or incredible or miraculous than the normal development of individuals from sperm and eggs in a mother's womb? In fact, many had made the comparison between progress of a development of a fetus in the womb, in some ways recapitulating the whole evolutionary story from fish to mammal and so on. Although that's a very approximate thing. It doesn't at all closely follow evolution, I should say. But Darwin wrote in The Descent of Man that the fact that humans have risen to the very summit of the organic scale instead of having been placed there from the beginning, the rising may give him hope for a still higher destiny in the distant future. In those days, evolution was closely linked to progress and constantly upward, or as the late great Gene Shepherd put it, excelsior, onward and upward, the motto of New York State.
Is it true that Darwin was something of a racist?
Because the book is subtitled The Preservation of Favored Races in the Struggle for Existence, some people have thought that he was a racist. He was a very conventional Victorian gentleman. He certainly thought that the tribal peoples of the world who ran around naked and had dark skin were not the equivalent of civilized man. But he was puzzled because he had a black man who was a freed slave who taught him how to mount and stuff birds, a very bright guy. Darwin respected him tremendously. When he took these Indians back to Tierra del Fuego after they had been educated and Christianized in England, he noted how sharp they were and the mental acuity and the developed manners. One of them loved to wear kid gloves and highly polished boots. So he was really kind of puzzled on the subject in general. But one thing he was not puzzled on was the issue of slavery. He detested it. He was passionately against slavery even before he went to a slave country. And his uncle, Josiah Wedgwood, made those famous plates of the black man in chains with the slogan, "Am I not a man and a brother?" which became a wide slogan of the abolitionists. Jim Moore and Adrian Desmond refer to Darwin's abolitionism as Darwin's sacred cause. And that's the title of their new book. And the idea that they promote is that there's a subtext, there's a backstory in Darwin's Descent of Man, which is the attempt to show that we are all one species, evolved from apes, yes, but all of us, and that some were not necessarily higher or lower. what was going on at that time was that pro-slavery partisans were arguing for what they called a polygenic origin of mankind, that God created different kinds of people, including superior varieties that were meant to be masters of the inferior kinds. And one classic excuse for dominating and enslaving tribal peoples was that their colonial masters would improve them, the white man's burden, improve their cultures. As far as I can see, Darwin wrote in his journal, we are improving them right off the face of the earth. When Darwin was in Brazil, many times he saw mistreatment, which he describes in his book, The Voyage of the Beagle, how people used thumbscrews on their slaves to punish them. Little kids, if they brought a dirty glass of water, they were smashed in the face, put in the thumbscrews. He heard the screams at night of some slaves that had particularly sadistic masters. Apparently the Portuguese were pretty nasty at this. And Darwin said those screams of those slaves haunted him the rest of his life. He had nightmares about it back in England until he was an old man. So he was very sincere, and he thought he was going to provide a scientific basis for the unity of mankind. And that's what this book, Darwin's Sacred Cause, is all about. And if I may say so, these guys are wonderful scholars, wonderful writers, and you will find this book a bit of a revelation about Darwin.
I understand that in April, a 100-voice choir in Cambridge, Massachusetts, will be performing 8 of your Darwin songs.
That's true, and I couldn't be more thrilled. I mean, I've had some small notice as a writer and so on, but to be recognized as a songwriter, it's a thrill.
Well, Richard Milner, I want to thank you for coming down here today. It's always interesting talking to you.
Always enjoy talking with you.
I was lying awake with a dismal headache, and my sleep was put off by anxiety. But I feared that my plan of explaining how man had evolved would bring on notoriety. Though I fled London town for the village of Downton and a home that is quiet and regal, yet I get no repose, and I can't even doze without dreaming I'm back on the Beagle. We're rounding the horn in a furious storm, and our progress is measured in inches. Then we're rolling around till the crew's almost drowned, and they scatter like terrified finches. Fitzroy's in a mood, and he's coming unglued, and cannot say where our next port is. I fear he's unwell, for he sprouted a shell and turns into a monstrous tortoise. He ignores the enormity of this deformity, carapace, scales, and the rest of it, and vows his complexion is close to perfection, and as for my fears, makes a jest of it. After 10,000 miles, the Galapagos Isles, now I'm tense and exceedingly weary, but I know that this place could result in disgrace when I use it to further my theory. Then I scramble ashore as a sea lion's roar, and I hear a contemptuous snicker. I glance up in a tree, and there, what do I see? 7 chimps and an Anglican vicar. It's not hard to tell, they're all mad as hell, and I ask, what's the source of your fury? His grace's retort is silence in court, for I am your judge and your jury. With a barrister's smile, he declares I'm on trial and tells me the cause for his action. You cannot escape, for you said man's an ape, and my clients demand satisfaction. To challenge my fitness, he calls his first witness, an albatross down from Guyana. But the bird flicks his tail and turns into a snail, then uncoils and becomes an iguana. The judge is perplexed, and I say, don't be vexed, we've been changing since Adam's arrival. The monk in his cloister descends from an oyster, the fittest of masters' survival. His honor says, quiet, the court will not buy it, you mock, sir, the truth of creation. You played fast and loose, now your neck's in a noose, and you're off to eternal damnation. I've given up hope as he tightens the rope, and the chimps start to make a commotion. When a wave hits the shore with a volcanic roar, and the island sinks under the ocean. With a shriek, I awake, and it's all a mistake, the iguana's really a kitten. No chimps are in sight on this miserable night, and no wonder I'm back in Great Britain. Regular wreck with a crick in my neck. My anxiety's hardly diminished. But the darkness has passed, and it's daylight at last, and the night's been too long. Ditto, ditto, my song. And thank goodness they're both of them finished.
we heard The Old Religion's Better After All by an unknown singer, at least unknown to me, and Darwin's Nightmare by the very well-known singer Richard Milner. And now, attend to this message, which will change your life.
It's very clear our love is here to stay. Not for a year, but ever and a day. The radio and the telephone and the movies that we know may just be passing fancies and in time may go. But oh my dear, love is here to stay. Together we're going a long, long way. In time the Rockies may crumble, Gibraltar may tumble, they're only made of clay. But our love,
agitée comme un roseau dans la tourmente, toutes mes nerfs et toutes mes rires en ce moment. Le monde me par ce beau jour de printemps. Fatigué, désabusé et sans courage, impatient, je ne sais plus ce qui me tend. Je sens arriver l'orage par ce beau jour de printemps. Je voudrais me sentir loin d'ici, fuir la vie de chaque jour. Peut-être en m'avadant ainsi, y trouverai-je un amour. Les bourgeons, les marronniers de mon enfance, l'aubépine, la jacinthe et les lilas blancs. Me chante le romance, douterai-je de printemps? Tout est si joyeux, pourtant je suis malheureux. D'où me vient tout ce tourment? C'est le printemps.
Blossom Dearie died recently at the age of 82. I first heard her on the Jack Parr Show when I was a teenager. I immediately took to her unique style. She had a wispy little girl voice. Someone once said that if Chet Baker and Betty Boop had a child, it would be Blossom Dearie. After a few appearances with Parr, I lost track of her until a few years ago when I saw a listing in the newspaper for her appearance at Danny's Skylight Room, a nightclub in the theater district. That was 5 years ago, when Blossom was 77 and still at the peak of her form. Now, you all know that I never leave my house except to inflict this program upon you. So a sojourn to Danny's represented a major upheaval in my life. Nonetheless, I decided to brave it. I called a friend, and he agreed to come along. Without paying off the host, we got a table stage side. The diva came out, looking pixie-ish, sat at the piano, and began playing her spare, lean lines. And that tiny, angelic voice began singing old favorites and more obscure songs, many with great wit and humor, some of her own writing. Her taste in songs was eclectic and impeccable. She was accompanied by a terrific drummer and bass player. I was in heaven. Unfortunately, my friend was not doing so well. He had eaten something that didn't agree with him and was in abdominal distress. He laid his head on the table. Blossom rose from the piano, walked to our table, and asked if my friend was okay. We assured her that he was, and she went back to the piano to work her magic. Margarita Blossom Dearie was born in 1926 in East Durham, New York, near Albany, and maintained a home there throughout her life. She studied classical piano until her teens, when she joined her high school band and became immersed in jazz. She moved to New York City in the mid-1940s, where she worked with the Woody Herman and Alvino Ray bands. Soon she went solo, developing her one-of-a-kind style. In 1950, she, like so many jazz musicians of the day, moved to France. There she formed a group, the Blue Stars. They had a huge hit with the French version of Lullaby of Birdland. and it was in France that she met and married saxophonist Bobby Jasper. Back in New York, she returned to her solo career and made her first six albums, mostly on the Verve label. She started appearing on television shows and recorded a successful commercial for Heyer's Root Beer. In the 1960s, she made four albums in England. In the 1970s, she started her own record company, Daffodil, giving herself complete artistic control. Her recordings portray not only great humor, but a sly sensuality. She continued to perform, mainly at Danny's, until her health began to deteriorate. Blossom Dearie did not like being called a jazz singer or a saloon singer. She preferred to be called, and surely was, a songwriter's singer. We started out this segment with Our Love Is Here to Stay from Blossom Dearie's album Once Upon a Summertime, and It Might As Well Be Spring from the album Blossom Dearie. We will conclude with three pieces. Give Him the Ooh La La, a Cole Porter song off the album Verve Jazz Masters 51. My Attorney Bernie, and Our Favorite Songs, and Chez Moi from the album My Gentleman Friend.
Say you're fond of fancy things, diamond clips and emerald rings, and you want your man to come through, give him the ooh la la. When your car is asked to stop by a handsome traffic cop, lest you want a ticket or two, give him the ooh la la. If Napoleon at Waterloo, la la, had an army of debutantes to give the British the well-known ooh la la, he'd have changed the history of France. When your favorite Romeo grabs his hat and starts to go, don't reveal the fact that you're blue. Don't break down and start to boo-hoo. There's just one thing for you, la la, to la la, do la la. Like Tallulah, just give him the ooh la la. If Napoleon at Waterloo, la la, had an army of debutantes to give the British the well-known ooh la la, he'd have changed the history of France. When your favorite Romeo grabs his hat and starts to go, don't reveal the fact that you're blue. Don't break down and start to boo-hoo. There's just one thing for you, la la, to la la, do la la. Like Tallulah, just give him the ooh la la. The ooh la la. The ooh la la. You'd better be like Tallulah. Don't be a fooler. Give him the ooh la la.
The next song is called My Attorney Bernie. This is by Dave Frischberg. I'm impressed with my attorney Bernie. I'm impressed with his influential friends. He's got very big connections, and I follow his directions. Bernie knows his way around, and so I always do what Bernie recommends. I'm blessed with my attorney Bernie. I'm impressed with the way he runs the store. He's got Dodger season boxes, and an office full of foxes. It's amazing all the different things your average girl might need a lawyer for. Bernie tells me what to do. Bernie lays it on the line. Bernie says we sue, we sue. Bernie says we sign. We sign. I'm in touch with my attorney Bernie. In a clutch, he can speed right to the scene. And if I'm locked up in the jail with just one phone call for my bail, he said to call his club collect or deal directly with his answering machine. When I dine with my attorney Bernie, he buys wine from the rare imported rack. That's 'cause Bernie is a purist, not your polyester tourist. Bernie waves the glass around a while, then takes a sip and always sends it back. Bernie tells me what to do. Bernie lays it on the line. Bernie says we sue, we sue. Bernie says we sign. We sign. Attorney Bernie, I admire any guy who knows his stuff. Sure, we blew a couple ventures with a counterfeit debentures, but you win a few, you lose a few. Like Bernie says, you keep on hanging tough. Thanks to you, my attorney Bernie. Thanks to you, I'm considered well-to-do. Sure, I made out like a bandit, just exactly like you planned it. But like Murray, my accountant, told me yesterday, I owe it all to you. Bernie tells me what to do. Bernie lays it on the line. Bernie says we sue, we sue. Bernie says we sign. We sign. Dotted line. Thank you very much.
Invite, y a de la joie chez moi, c'est merveilleux. À côté des étoiles, j'habite. À deux pas du ciel, toujours bleu. Je tendrai chez moi votre visite. Là-haut sous les toits, dans mon logis, tous les jours, je reçois. Venez, venez vite, c'est gentil chez moi. Venez-y. vous serez pour moi le seul ami. Nous n'aurons plus jamais de visite à la porte tous les ennuis. Nous serons heureux dans mon sixième. Il y a place pour deux dans mon logis. On comptera les fois où nous dirons je t'aime et tu viens chez moi. Restons-y.
Thanks to Richard Milner. Check out his website, www.darwinlive.com. And I want to acknowledge my sources for the Blossom Geary obituary, the New York Times and Wikipedia principally. Of course, I want to thank our no-show engineer, Jason Get Me to the Church on Time Isaac, and our worthwhile producer, not erstwhile as I mistakenly said last week, our sort of worthwhile producer, Frank Milspaugh. Send your objections, criticisms, personal attacks, etc. to my email address, noshow@wnyc.org. That's noshow@wnyc.org. Back next week, I suspect, my name is Roland Burris.